This is Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome in, everybody, to the Tuesday, October 24th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Got a lot to get to today. Going to react to the weekend in college football that was. Get a look at how teams are looking inside the film room, at least who I think is the best-looking teams to this point in college football. Got a lot to react to into the NFL as well. Want to remind you that on Thursday, we're going to feature a little bit with some of the impending coaching moves, particularly in the Southeastern Conference. There are other coaching possibilities, but some of the others are, quite frankly, like in the Pac-12 and the Arizona schools, coaches that are on the hot seat are playing a lot better and maybe have saved their jobs. But I want to focus a little bit, mainly in the SEC, about coaches, not just the ones that are on the hot seat, but there are as many as two or three coaches that might want to leave, being that they're under some pressure. They might have a better opportunity that's a better fit. Now, we'll discuss a little bit that who that might be and what would it take for them to move on from a really prestigious job to another prestigious job. Tough to do because tough to match your pay and everything that goes involved in it. But we'll break down that a little bit on Thursday, so you want to be with us for that. Today, though, we're going to start our show talking about, speaking of coaching moves, and I hate talking about the jobs that are not open yet, but the reality is we're all big boys. We understand as coaches that this is the world that we live in. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, because it is the time of year where coaching rumors are taking place, and in the advent world of social media, talk radio, everybody, you know, the rumors about this. Finally, the whole we went through the age of where Jimmy Johnson's coming out of retirement and Bill Cowher, and I mean, it's just amazing how people come up with this stuff. And oh yeah, this is I've talked to somebody who talked to somebody. I want to spend a little time going into some things and about how some of this maybe gets started, but want to take you from maybe the inside. For people who don't know, my background has been as a coach and as a scout at the college and NFL level. And in my consulting work, yes, a lot of it is scouting, consulting, in far as evaluating pro prospects for the draft and NFL players and free agency, and for what we call advanced scouting at both the college and pro level. But it's also in coaching consulting where what I do is I don't do searches for schools, but what I do is provide scouting reports on coaches and evaluate coaches. And, you know, everyone, you know, is into the coaching search, you know, interest from an interest standpoint. Very, very few people, I think, truly know the good coaches from the average coaches. They know the records. That's it. They really don't know what leads to it. So, like anybody that's in their profession, they know who's really good and maybe who's more hype. And so I'm going to get into a little bit about how I view it from the inside, knowing these coaches, working with these coaches on a daily basis, and evaluating coaches. I'll get into a little bit about how I evaluate coaches and where that, you know, it's like evaluating players. You don't just sit there and say, I like them. You know, you have to evaluate them and put them under scrutiny, and then you got to make the right fit like any matchmaker. But I wanted to specifically talk about a guy that is brought up every year at this time, somebody that I know very, very well, that I've known everyone in his family very, very well, and that's John Gruden. The annual hype has taken place. Is he going to come out of the Monday night booth and take a job? And oh, he's got a son that goes to Tennessee, you know, and his wife was a cheerleader at Tennessee. I bet you didn't know that. Yeah, I'm sure you have. You've probably been told that 100 times. And, you know, it gets into that. And so, first of all, let me just address this, that the first thing that people say is, well, he's not interested. He is interested. First of all, no one truly knows what somebody's interested or not interested in doing. But I think I have a better feel than most people. Very close with Jim Gruden, John's dad, who I scouted with and worked with for a long time. And I saw John grow up in coaching, as I did Jay. Saw both of them as players. Jay was a little bit better player. John was a lesser player at Dayton, but really good. The older son I know a little, but he was not in football and was actually, I think, a doctor, a physician somewhere. But I know John and Jay very well, know Jim very well. So I saw him come up the ranks, and it's a brilliant football coach. And we're going to get into why certain coaches are certain fits and why maybe they're not. But first of all, I don't think John would be interested in coaching in college. And I'm going to tell you why, though, while, you know, not trying to dismiss any possibility. Again, it's somebody else's decision. It's not mine. It would be his if somebody offered him an opportunity. But I'm going to explain why he would not be a good college coach. And I say that with all due respect and as a friend, and because I think part of evaluating a coach is knowing what a coach's strengths are and where his fits are and where they're not. And having a lot of coaching friends, I've told many of them, I don't think you're a good fit here. I don't think you'd be good here, but I think you'd be good there. And that's no different than a player. It's like telling a player, no, I don't think you can play quarterback, but here's where I think you can be effective. I don't think you can play receiver, but I think you can play safety. That's part of what you learn as a football guy coming up as a coach and as a scout, knowing where guys fit. Well, evaluating coaches are no different. It's just having the same process in which you evaluate. I don't think John would be interested, but so why doesn't he put, you know, squelch the rumors from the very beginning? Because he doesn't want to. It's an ego thing that loves, you know, people in today's world love to have their name mentioned, love to be thought of as, you know, the apple of somebody's eyes, and then and he's the you know, everybody wants him. He's the answer. It's great for the ego, and it's great for the publicity, and that's why they tend to kind of let that go and let it play out. I always say, if you look at the analysts, and I think John Madden was a very good coach for the Raiders. John Madden made the Hall of Fame as a coach because there's a game named after him, and he was a fabulous broadcaster that everybody loved, most everybody loved. Bill Cowher, you know, was basically getting run out of Pittsburgh, and now he's won a Super Bowl, yes, and everybody thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you know, you get looking a little bit better than maybe you really were, because when you're on TV, you're on radio, you're perceived to be different or better than you are. And to show you what I mean by that, I'm going to take a lesser example of somebody far less important, and to show you that it is certainly nothing personal against these folks, I'm going to take myself as an example. As spending a life in football, I was fortunate enough to be around and being involved in building three different Super Bowl rosters for three different organizations. And in the football world had, you know, the respect of a lot of people that, you know, knew what was going on and knew who did what. Yet I could tell you that because I never really talked to the media or never was in a position where I had to and was never sought out to, that I did my work behind the scenes and incognito, and it was great, quite frankly. There was nobody in the media knew who the heck I was. Now that I'm on radio, done a little TV, mostly radio nationally and locally around the country, I got people and got a website that we do a lot that provide information to fans. I get this all the time. You should be the next GM of the Browns. You should be this or that. No, I shouldn't. It's not a good fit for me. It wouldn't be a good fit for me because there are certain things about that job that wouldn't be a good fit. And the Browns or anyone else would deserve a much better GM than me. But again, the perception of me is that I've got all the answers because I'm on radio or TV. Well, I don't have all the answers. Okay, not even close. I think I have more of it than people that have not been involved in it. And I think that by the nature of what I have to do as a consultant, if I didn't get it right most of the time, then I really wouldn't have an ability to make a living and support myself. The point I'm trying to make is, we tend to fall in love with somebody because they sound great, they look great, and they've got all the answers. Well, it's easy to have all the answers when you're writing or talking or whatnot. John Gruden, a brilliant football coach. Hey, what makes him brilliant? He's a brilliant in one area. He's a great strategist. He's great, and I've spent meetings with him, film sessions with him, being involved with him in the staff, meeting this guy. Really understands how to diagram plays and try to take advantage of coverage and front mismatches on defense. He's very good at that. If you look at him in his past, he was very successful learning in Green Bay under Holmgren, and he learned a lot of that West Coast style that's basically his principled in. He also, when he went to the Raiders, really good roster with a veteran quarterback in Rich Gannon, was great, a perfect fit for a veteran team with a lot of big-time talent, and he could attack a defense very well. Goes to Tampa, was what the doctor ordered in Tampa. Tony Dungy had built a very good team with Jerry Angelo, Rich McKay, and company. But they, with a great defense, led by Monty Kiffin and Tony, but they couldn't get enough done on offense. John was the right touch. It was still a defense that won that Super Bowl for that Bucs team, but they milked a lot out of that offense. Why? Because they were able to attack people. Even with limited personnel, they were able to attack people with a veteran quarterback that could run and handle all that what John liked to put in. John is fancy. John is the guy that would be the great architect for the folks in Beverly Hills that want to build $10 million homes. They could put lavish stuff together. Now, for maybe you and I, you know, when you want to build that nice home that just want to have the nice foundation and solid, you know, not really good with that. They want to do too much fluff and not enough substance in terms of how to build the house. So it's again, it's about fits. It's not whether somebody's good enough. It's what are they good at and what's their strength. If you study John and been involved in coaching like I was and been around John, the problem that John had in the NFL was he could not teach young players very well. Not great at teaching technique, even in quarterbacks. And not great at getting them to kind of focus on what they need to focus on in the minutiae of the game. John was more big picture, more scheme oriented in terms of big picture offense. Was not a good fit for understanding how offenses and defenses work together. Not very good at evaluating talent at all. And he was, again, very impatient with young guys. Why? Because what his understanding was, he had a lot of concepts he wanted to throw out at you. Well, if you couldn't do all of those things, then what do you do? Well, you know, coaches have to be able to dial it down and become a little bit more simplistic, make it a little bit more easier to understand. And John struggled with that in the NFL. He couldn't develop a young quarterback or young teams because that was not his strength. Well, folks, that's all you coach in college. The whole college coaching concept is you have to evaluate players that fit your scheme. Not a great evaluator. Okay, you can get good coaches that can recruit. That's fine. But you've got to be able to coach, and you've got to be able to oversee, and you've got to be able to be big picture. John's strength is as a coordinator, play caller, head coach, coordinator, play caller at the NFL level for a veteran team. would he be the answer, for example, for the Indianapolis Colts if they actually could get an Andrew Luck healthy, if they could put talent around Andrew Luck? Would he be great to take them to the next level? Yes, he would. Would he be good at taking a young quarterback, you know, for example, that are coming into the league? Certainly he could do a lot with a veteran quarterback, but, you know, even a guy like Carson Wentz, who's great, and if you listen to the game last night, he's doing the game and talking about Carson Wentz. Well, part of the reason why Carson Wentz is so good is that he's a great student of the game. But if you look at what Doug Peterson and John DeFilippo are doing coaching him, they're giving him a simple process to learn and grow and develop. You know, they're not throwing everything with him. They're not making him be a quarterback that is an 8-year veteran in the league that can do everything. They're trying to work around what he can do well, and he's learning it at a faster pace because he's a gym rat. I'm not saying John couldn't coach him, but he couldn't coach him as well as the guys in Philadelphia are coaching him right now. So the point is to not disrespect John, but to explain what makes John great, and also explain what makes his frailties what they are, because every coach has them. We all have them. None of us are perfect. Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, I've been around and coached with them. They have them as well. But understanding that and understanding what you can do around it is key. Now, John lives for football. He lives for breaking down tape, and he lives for finding ways and plays that can attack a defense. That's great. That's great as an offensive play caller at a big-time level like the NFL. It is not great at the college level with a 20-hour work week, and you're trying to teach a young player. The college game has gone to the spread concepts because it's simplified. John Gruden has studied the college concepts very, very well, and he gets it. It's real easy to attack. Now, could he teach a quarterback very well? Sure he could. I think, could he do it at the college level? I think to a point he could. But again, developing a young player is not something that he's ever done and, quite frankly, he's never been good at. In fact, he and I have talked a lot about why it's so difficult. And one of the things has been, you know, it's probably one of the reasons why Magic Johnson and Larry Bird were not great basketball coaches, because they couldn't do things the same way, couldn't get players to do things the same way they did them, because those players weren't as good, and so they couldn't really relate. John is really good, and again, is ahead of the game in terms of his dynamics of play calling, but the teaching of how to do it is not something he's very good at, quite frankly. So that's why I say, listen, it's not a good fit. Again, John understands that more than anybody. Don't think he'd have any interest in doing it. And what I'm here to say is, if it's Tennessee, I know you want to win the press conference. You want to sell tickets. You want to make everybody excited about who you hired. Folks, press conference lasts an hour. The offseason is a few months of excitement. But then when you can't recruit and develop young players, you're dead in the water. So I think it's really important that when you throw things out, and I understand that fans and a lot of times the media, they don't know who are their good coaches. They know who's been successful, and they affix credit or blame towards the record of that particular coach, and very often they misinterpret who does what. I can remember, I think the world of Bill Parcells. I think the world of Bill Belichick. Obviously, I work with those guys, and I know them very well. Before Bill Belichick ever got his first opportunity, people thought it was all Parcells. Well, in large regard, everywhere Parcells went, he won. But it is important to note that Parcells has won everywhere he's gone. But everywhere he's gone, he's not gone to a Super Bowl without Bill Belichick as his assistant. So there's something to be said for that. The defenses were great mainly due to Bill Belichick. Now, Parcells had a lot to do with that, and he had a lot to do with how they did things overall as a team and certainly how he motivated. Very, very important to understand. Jimmy Johnson. He's a great college coach, recruited well. That was his strength. And goes to Dallas, and he hires a great teaching staff that he had with him in Miami. And they won. And if had they stayed together, would have won more. He goes to Miami, and those guys kind of left him, and he's at Miami, and he's not as in tune with who the best coaches are. He no longer has that tie. He brings some of those people back together in Miami, and guess what? A lot of them weren't as good, and different coaches. He wasn't very good at Miami, with the Dolphins I'm talking about. Perfect example. You're only as good as your ability to put people around you and to understand that. And if you look at John, he left the Raiders before things, he went to Tampa. So I'm not going to say that, but things got worse in Oakland gradually as the veterans started to move on. In Tampa, the team got worse because he stayed there a little longer. Team got worse the longer he was there because he wasn't able to fix it. He wasn't able to fix the offense. He wasn't able to find, develop, and coach the young quarterbacks of the passing game because they couldn't run the offense that he wanted to run. He couldn't adjust down his offense to fit the skill set of his players. He had to get players that fit what he wanted to do, and he was very rigid that way. That is very, very difficult to do in college. You're bringing young players, and you're molding them like clay. John's not a molder of clay. John is a guy that can go into the house already built and really do the best interior decorating. That's what he is. Knowing who the best coaches are is knowing who does what in a coaching operation. And very often the credit goes to one person, usually the person that's more media friendly. And it happens this way in scouting too. It's not the media's fault. The media's responsibility is to gather as much information as possible, and most of them do a great job of staying on top and talking to people. And, you know, independently talking to people to try to get into the what's truly real. But understand that from a media standpoint, it's all secondhand. Ironically, they're called the insiders. Well, really, what they are the outsiders trying to get the inside information. But, you know, if you're not on the inside and you don't see it happen, then you really don't know. You're trusting somebody else's word. And then everyone has their own viewpoint. I'm not saying that people lie. I'm just saying that people see things the way they want to see them. People always overestimate their own importance, and people tend to underestimate other people's importance. That's just human nature. I can tell you what I think about basketball coaches or baseball coaches. Folks, I've never coached in the NBA or coached at major college basketball level or at the baseball level. I don't know who does what in basketball. I follow it like everyone else, but I'm not on the inside. I don't make those decisions. I'm not around to see who does what in an organization. So therefore, it is very difficult for me to know, because I'm getting it secondhand, not firsthand. But when it's your job to be involved, and you sit in on a lot of meetings, and you help as a consultant, and you answer questions, and you ask questions, and you know who's responsible for what, and who are the real teachers, who are the recruiters, who are the great X's and O guys, who are the motivators. You know, and how do you put all that together? You only know that if you see it firsthand. And the best way I can explain it is anybody out there listening is in some sort of profession or has been. I don't know, maybe it's sales. Well, you might think that somebody's a really good salesman, or I might think that. I don't know. If you're in the sales business and you've got half a dozen other salesmen that you work with, and you might know, because you've been on the field with them, who's really good, who's really on top of their game, who can really sell and get people to understand and buy and encourage into your product, as opposed to somebody that just maybe gets results. Well, results are all that matter. Well, yeah, results are all that matter. I get it, but why do you get results? I mean, if you've got the best product, is it tougher to sell, or is it tougher to sell maybe an inferior product? I mean, those are the things that, you know, so who are the best salesmen? Well, guess what? You're going to know that better than I am because you're involved with them every day. And same thing, you know, who are the best accountants or lawyers or what have you? Well, you know, again, you know that based upon your inside knowledge of A, you're a lawyer, you're a CPA, you're a salesman, you're a doctor, whatever. You know that business. You know what it takes to be successful. You know who does that well, not who just has the reputation, but who truly does it the best. And if you're unbiased and you don't, you know, if somebody's your friend, you may think more of them. If you don't like somebody, you may think less of them. But if you're looking at it in an unbiased viewpoint, you can pretty much say, hey, this is the guy I want. If you're a writer or you're you know, broadcaster, you run a television network, radio network, station, big website or what have you, you know maybe who are the best writers, who are the best reporters. Because why? You know who does a good job. You know not just the finished product, but who is doing the behind-the-scenes work to unearth it. That's critical. So that's the same thing. It's no different than the football business. You know it. So I get this a lot. I've had a lot of success. My consulting business developed quite by accident when I was working for the Browns and Oilers / Titans. You know, I recommended Nick Saban before anyone knew who Nick Saban was. I mean, people thought Nick Saban was Lou Saban's son or grandson. I mean, they didn't know who Nick Saban was before he was the head coach at Toledo. I mean, he wasn't even on anybody's radar. I worked with Nick Saban. I knew Nick Saban before he ever got the Michigan State job. To me, I saw greatness in him. I'm not smarter than anybody else, folks. Trust me. If you knew me well enough, you'd know that. But you'd know that deeply embedded in football and knowing, and I would like to think pretty intelligent on football and being involved in it, I know who's good and I know who's not. There's some people that are very, very good friends that I won't mention any names, but I don't think they're great head coaching candidates. And I can't recommend them because I don't think they're very good. But Nick Saban, Bob Stoops is another one. Again, before most people knew of him, I remember having a long talk with Steve Spurrier when he was trying to find an answer to fix his defense when he was getting shellacked by Nebraska in the championship game. Is, you know, Bob Stoops was this guy that A, had the type of arrogant quality that would fit real well with you, Steve, that I mentioned, and he could bring that answer to the defensive side and that edge to the defensive side that you brought to the offensive side. Kurt Ferentz, another one. Urban Meyer. Knew Urban Meyer when he was a graduate assistant at Ohio State. I remember introducing him to Skip Holtz, who was a young coach for his dad at Notre Dame. And when he got a part-time job at Bowling Green, did Urban as an assistant, he was a guy that came on the radar. He got full-time. And it took Skip. Skip had to convince his dad to hire Urban Meyer on his staff at Notre Dame as a receiver coach. But the rest is history. You know, how did I know that? It's not some magical power. You know what the qualities are to be a good football coach and which ones have it, which ones don't, and which ones have the work ethic. It's no different than me saying, when everybody thought Jamarcus Russell was going to be great, I thought Jamarcus Russell was going to be a bust. Why? Because Jamarcus Russell didn't have a high capacity or high willingness to learn. So he was going to flop. His physical skills was going to get him drafted higher, but he was going to flop. So it's understanding how to evaluate a player and how to evaluate a coach. It's not real difficult. You just have to know what you're doing. But I've been fortunate. I remember Mack Brown as a young assistant at LSU back in the day and how he had those factors. Kirby Smart, got Kirby Smart his first GA job with Saban. You know, same with Muschamp as well. Mark Richt, when you could see him very early as a guy that really gravitated towards the game as a backup quarterback at Miami, and he was, to me, had the goods to be a head coach. It jumped out with him on Bobby Bowden's staff. You know, when you're able to kind of take hold of that offense, when you've got Tommy and Terry and Jeff, who really were the guys that Bobby wanted to put in that position, but he couldn't because Mark was so good at it. You knew that he had the physical and the integral intangible qualities to be really good. I remember recommending to Les Miles years ago about his offensive coordinator job, the two guys that I thought would be really good fits. One was a guy that I thought if he wanted to kind of improve the tempo and the style of his offense, which Les didn't want to do, but I tried to convince him that that might be an option that he ought to look at. I said, there's a co-offensive coordinator at TCU that you ought to look at. His name was Justin Fuente. Justin ended up taking, after staying at TCU and not getting an interview at LSU, he ended up staying at TCU and he ended up moving on to Memphis. And of course, he's now at Virginia Tech. The other guy that I recommended that I said, look, this is the guy that would be a perfect fit for your system that could get the most out of you, from you. And I said, go and pay a lot of money and get Paul Chryst away from Wisconsin. Paul was the offensive coordinator at Wisconsin at the time. Paul ended up, he ended up not getting an interview as well. Paul ends up moving on and getting the head job at Pitt, and we all know is now the head coach at Wisconsin. Gary Patterson's another guy. You know, how do you know that Gary Patterson is going to be a real good fit as a replacement for Dennis Franchione? Well, he had been in the program for 3 years and is a very organized, very bright, big over, you know, broad-thinking coach that's not only good coaching on defense and dominated in the Mountain West defensively along with Utah, but then as he went to the Big 12, his forward-thinking mind realizing, look, we got to play a different style of offense. Then he goes out and hires guys like a Justin Fuente. So it's guys like that that when you know the business, you see it. Matt Campbell now at Iowa State's another guy that we really like. Tom Herman, Matt Rhule, Schiano was a really good one. When he was in a, you know, people thought, you know, hey, wait a minute, you know, when he went back to Rutgers and, you know, one of the things, his ability to understand recruiting and how to develop young players and to build a program, sustainable program, we're all pivotal elements towards, hey, look, this guy will do the best job you can do at Rutgers as you can get. We all know that he did. Jeff Brohm's another one. A quarterback, guru, teacher, understanding of offenses, doing a very good job at Western Kentucky, now at Purdue. Brian Kelly, another one at Grand Valley State. Mike Bobo, who's now at Colorado State. Jeff Tedford, another one. Go on and on and on. Look, Dabo Swinney is a better head coach than I thought he would be. Don't get them all right, folks. I'm not suggesting that. But when you know it on the inside, you have a better feel for it. So, look, it's easy for people to see that Carson Wentz is a great NFL player. But as a scout, you have to be able to have that vision beforehand. It's not being brilliant. There are no geniuses in football, folks. It's just when you know the business, you understand the business, you see things that others don't see because they're not working inside of it. Evaluating coaches are the same thing as evaluating players. Okay, they're different criteria, and I'm going to end with that, the criteria of some of the things that I look for. But when you evaluate players, you don't sit there and say like a lot of people do, you know, and you read this on the internet and whatnot, here are the best players, and here are going to be the top 10 picks. That doesn't mean a diddly squat. There's no such thing. That comes much later. You stack your board much later. It's evaluating time, and most of these people that write it, they just gather information. You have to evaluate players. You can go up on LandryFootball.com and see how every position is evaluated. Every critical factor for each position, every position specific. You put verbiage and you put numbers at each spot, and you prioritize what's important, 1 through 20, because there are about 20 different categories you have to evaluate at each position. this is the most important of the 20, and this is the least important of the 20, but they're all important or they wouldn't be on the list. And you have to put a number in addition to the verbiage, and it takes you to a grade. And the grade, relatively speaking, takes you to where you stack these guys. All very important to understand. Well, why would it be any different than coaching? I started after helping a few folks with coaching searches or evaluations, I should say, because I never tell anybody who to hire, because it's like telling somebody who to marry. Can't do that. I mean, you know, you can tell me you like, you know, blondes and you like this age group and you like somebody who likes, you know, long walks in the park and all that. Well, that's fine, but the chemistry has to be there. It has to work. You got to work with one another. In this case, live with one another. You got to make that decision. But I can evaluate coaches like I do players. What do you look for? And there's a litany of things that I look for in coaches, and I evaluate in great detail and have scouting reports on all of these guys. I get often asked, you know, I need to hire a running back coach. Who do you like? And I'll get this. I need to hire a minority coach at this position. I need somebody who's a running back coach who can be a good fit here, and this is what I'm looking for. Boom. Got it for. And I'll tell them, I may give them names, but I will give them scouting reports so that they can go and evaluate what it is. What do you look for? Being involved in it, there are important qualities that must be scrutinized like you do evaluating a player. Number one, character and loyalty. What is that? It's coaching reputation. That's the respect level among your peers in the football community. Not the public, not the media perception, not through your coaching buddies who you came up with, but people who are truly you respect and that others respect. And one of the things that I do to get a jump start is I go to people who play against the coaches and find out, who do you like? Who gives you the most difficulty? One of the things in talking with Brian Kelly before he made his last hire, Mike Elko from Wake Forest, is, and it was an easy sell because Brian played against Wake Forest when Mike was there. So he saw how he took a lot away from Notre Dame. That impressed Brian. Well, that's a lot. And he didn't know Mike. I think sometimes getting coaches out of their comfort zone and not hiring their buddies, but hiring people who are the best at their business, it's what you want to do. But there has to be the character and loyalty has to work. The background, what's their experience? What's their achievement level to this point in his career? You don't have to. An association with a winning program is nice, but it's not necessary. I mean, if you're at a place that doesn't have the resources, and you get the most out of it, that's getting it done at a high level. Third is player and staff development from a head coach. This is the ability to teach, communicate, and develop players' technical skills. That includes the knowledge of positional technique, the use of players within scheme concepts, the ability to motivate and generate the most out of a player's ability. It also includes the ability to teach and develop assistants on the staff, called coaching the coaches. The technical aspect, that's the ability to design and implement systems, designing of game plans, including creating favorable matchups, situations, and game day adjustments. It also includes the teaching of assistant coaches and players in classroom situations. That's what we call knowing football. Teaching is the ability to translate the knowledge from the technical sense onto the practice field where you can creatively get your point across in various manners to help players understand thoroughly and quickly. Motivation is a true critical part of teaching. A lot of people know the material. How many of you in college had lectures from somebody that might have been one of the foremost experts? I had a foremost experts in, I don't know, a biological, you know, species. Or a period in our history that could regurgitate everything that happened at the, you know, the Battle of Bighorn or what have you. But they had the inability to communicate it. Monotone, you had a hard time falling asleep, right? Some guys have the technical knowledge, but they can't teach it very well. I've been around guys that have really good technical knowledge, an Ernie Adams, for example, who's on Bill Belichick's staff, not a good teacher, doesn't communicate very well, but he has a really good analytical football background to break film, understand it, and can teach it to fellow coaches and provide it to them, but not really good at translating and teaching it to players. Well, it doesn't matter what you know. It's what you can teach them what you know, and that's really important. Next is talent evaluator. This is really important in college. It's the ability to identify the technical and athletic traits of players. It includes the ability to evaluate others' coaching skills. So it's being able to identify coaches, other coaches, and players. Now, and it's a big part of what I do to try to help folks on their hiring their assistants on their staff or hiring head coaches. I'm a bigger asset probably to administrators who've never been involved in football, but helping head coaches is something that is we've been fortunate to be a part of. Recruiting and salesmanship. That's the ability to show verbally and on the blackboard and in film cutups how a player fits into a football system, as well as to how he fits into the chemistry of the football team or the community in which the team resides. And then the eighth thing that I think is pivotal, and this is the overview, not the full details. I'm giving you the Cliff Notes version. It's program/team management, the ability to work with staff administrators, personnel support staff. That's really key. In order to be successful as a coach, he must be an outstanding in five of these areas and good in at least two others. If he's lacking in any of these areas, he must hire assistant coaches exceptionally well in areas where he's not strong. In these cases, the quality of staff is more important than those who excel in those areas. So it's really important. In order to be a good college assistant, you must be outstanding in two of the following: technical, which is knowing football and on the blackboard, teaching, that's football on the field, and recruiting. In order to be a good NFL assistant coaches, you must be outstanding in both the technical and the teaching aspect. So those are some general ideas of what it takes to be successful. I go into more detailed and more specifics in my evaluation, but that gives you some idea of, you know, again, don't buy into the hype positively or negatively. Don't get excited about what a guy could do or can't do based upon hype. Try to get to know what the guy really is. So in conclusion on this topic, what I'd like to say is, folks, don't buy into the hype about this guy's the answer, that guy's the answer. Well, we can't hire somebody at XYZ school. We're ABC school. Get off your high horse, okay? Understand that good coaches come from a lot of places, and find a good coach, just like good players. You know, and because you don't know anything about them, it's why your opinion, quite frankly, doesn't matter. Now, unfortunately, we're living in an age where administrators at the college level mostly don't know how to hire coaches because they don't know, they've never coached themselves, and they don't have that information. It's quite frankly, it's to the benefit of somebody like myself that can help educate them. But in the old days, and you see it occasionally, I mean, you see Barry Alvarez do a pretty good job of hiring coaches. Why do you think that is? Because he knows coaching. He's been in coaching. It's not perfect, you know. Now, he'll tell you, you got to do a lot of extra work to hire a volleyball coach because he doesn't know volleyball coaches. But he uses his contacts, and he can figure it out, and that's there are ways to do it. But he knows football, so he knows football coaches, and he knows who does a good job and who's got the hype and who's really are the ones that are getting it done. That's the reality of it. People thought Bill Belichick was a failure as a coach in Cleveland. He wasn't a failure in coaching Cleveland. Do your homework. Built that team from nothing into a playoff team, and they moved, and, you know, he's done a lot of the same things that he did in New England, but he's been in a better situation, great owner, and he found Tom Brady, and all of a sudden he's got the gosh, he's got enough rings for two hands now. So, or close to it. That's the difference. It doesn't matter, you know, where you went to school, where you coached at. It's not about the results. The results do not matter. Let me repeat that. The results do not matter. The results are just that, the result. What matters is the process that creates the result. Do you have the transferable skills to create that result? If the environment's not as good, the coach can't perform the same duties, then you're likely to not have success. But if a player or a coach can do it, and he has the environment in which to do it and adjust for different circumstances, then it's transferable, and it will be successful with the right timing and enough patience. If you got the know-how, you can do it. It doesn't matter if you're a quarterback at North Dakota State. Okay, you can be just as successful in the NFL as a quarterback that plays at Alabama or anywhere else. It's the transferable skills. People look at the result. Anyone can look at the result. If you look at the result, you're just getting just that, the result. You don't know why the result took place. And very often, people with the result don't have the results when they get hired at the next place. Why? Because they maybe hired the wrong guy. They maybe hired the guy that was the biggest part of the hype and didn't really know. If you sit down and eat a great meal, why is it a great meal? Well, because it tastes good. No, it's a great meal because somebody prepared it. They used the right amount of ingredients, right amount of time and care to cook it, and the result is you have a good meal that anybody can taste it and see that it's good, but not everybody could maybe have cooked it or designed it. And maybe if you learned how to cook and design it, you could cook it, but you haven't, so you're just eating it. You're just looking at the result. So anyway, enough with the preaching. I don't mean to do that, but that is a better understanding of the coaching process of how to hire guys, how to evaluate guys, rather. And then once you evaluate guys correctly, the hiring process is easy. It's just like draft day is easy once you've evaluated players correctly. If you do that, it's easy. You know, the Browns passed on Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson because they don't know how to evaluate quarterbacks, the front office. Front office people, not football people, never been around it. So their analytics says, guy from North Dakota State, not going to be very good, not a top 30 player in their draft board. Somebody that knows football sees it a lot differently. Everybody now says Carson Wentz, I knew he was going to be great. When I was touting him 2 years ago, I got asked to think, but he went to North Dakota State. Browns fans, I remember doing radio in Cleveland, and everybody said, you can't got a guy like that. He's not going to do anything. Again, now everybody thinks he's great. I remember when everybody knows that Nick Saban's a Hall of Famer. Well, that's the answer. You go get a Nick Saban. Go find a Nick Saban. Do you know who the next Nick Saban is? Well, nobody knows. You know, you can't hire a sure – you're not going to hire a sure thing, folks. You got to go out there and find your next Nick Saban. It may not be another Nick Saban, but there's good coaches out there. When I recommended Nick Saban to LSU before he ended up back when they hired Jerry DiNardo, and eventually when they hired him the next go-around, thank goodness I was able to convince Mark Emmert to do it, and I don't think he bought it from me, I can tell you that. I got enough NFL people to vouch for it, and thank goodness he took a chance. No one, and if anybody says so, they're lying. No one thought that was a good move. This guy is not from here. He hasn't done anything, yada, yada, yada. No, people will lie through their teeth and say, well, we knew it from the – trust me, I got vilified. You're an idiot. He's just a friend of yours. You're just doing it. Again, it's not that I'm smarter than anybody. It's that when you know things and you're involved in it, you know it better. And you have the aptitude to evaluate coaches like you do players. So anyway, let's enough on that. I'm ate up most of the time, but I want to really get into a couple of things. We're going to spend a lot of time. We're talking a little bit on Thursday about some coaches that might be looking for greener pastures, even with good jobs. We're going to do that on Thursday, and we're going to get more into the games of the week. But a couple of things that jumped out at me of this past weekend in college football. Wisconsin, steady as she goes, very good team. Matt Campbell doing a phenomenal job at Iowa State. Got to give a lot of credit to Oklahoma State coming up with some big plays on defense. Texas got to figure out their offense. Tom Herman, another one of those guys we talked about, really good. Going to try to work towards having a bigger hand in their offense. We'll see whether that takes them. Miami, press what Mark Richt is doing. Why? This is not a great team. They're not a national playoff team. But for the first time in a long time, this Miami team's smart. They're overachieving, fundamentally sound. Arizona State under Todd Graham is playing some good ball right now. Very impressed to see. LSU playing better, yes. How good? Not quite sure. They get Alabama after a bye week this week. It's going to be very, very difficult. Arkansas looks like dead man walking. We'll get into that a little bit more. Very impressed with what Notre Dame is doing. That's another example. Now listen to the talking heads. Brian Kelly's an idiot. Fired. Overrated. Don't like him in the press conference. Guy's one hell of a football coach. Good football coach at Grand Valley. Good coach at Cincinnati. He's done a really good job at Notre Dame. No, last year was a bad year. And even good coaches have bad years. They don't find the right mix. And he did a poor job. He learned. He adjusted. Very good, well-coached team. Offensive line may be right now the best on film. Harry Heinstead's doing a really good job. And mentioned Mike Elkin, what a great job he's doing with the defense. Can't say enough about Penn State. Trace McSorley is the difference in spurring that offense. Saquon Barkley's phenomenal. Defense played well. They shredded a very good Michigan defense. Very curious to see what they will do against the Buckeyes in the Horseshoe this week. This past week in the NFL, real quickly, desperate teams, watch out for them. The Raiders against Kansas City was one of those cases. Tampa's just not very good right now, and Buffalo gets them at home. Just a better-looking team than the Bucs right now. The best team in the NFC South, no doubt right now, the Saints. Can that hold up? Going to be interesting to see. This Jacksonville defense is for real, folks. The Rams offense is for real, folks. Miami starting to play better. Well coached. Matt Moore is the answer at quarterback short term. We're interested going forward how that develops. Pittsburgh, team to watch. Maybe the team to beat in the NFC. AFC. They've got, obviously, the ability to hurt you in the passing game. If Le'Veon Bell can stay healthy, if they're going to be awfully tough to beat in the NFC. Atlanta got major problems. Check on the website. We've got a story about part of what their problem is in our film breakdowns. You got to love what Philadelphia has done. We talked and referenced Carson Wentz a great deal. It was on my mind the game last night. Really good team, well coached. Folks, a long way to go. But certainly how these teams have evolved going into week 8 is interesting. Also got features going up, breaking down each position, who's graded out the best by position thus far this year. So check that out on our website. You'll love it. I think we'll give you some really good information that you can't get anywhere else. It's why we recommend you become a member. We got different membership options to become involved with us. And again, be sure to join us on Thursday's edition of the Landry Football Podcast, where we'll get into more of the coaching issues and some of the issues that might be taking place in the SEC, with some coaches maybe putting some feelers out. Maybe they want to move on to other places. We're going to get into that and how that might play out in the pros and cons of that. So check us out then. And we appreciate it, and talk to you next time on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
Do you like bets and ball games? Yeah, you do. And so do I. Do you like to win when you bet on ball games? We do, and that's why we're here to help guide you to winning wagers. I'm Brian Edwards, the host of the Games Galore podcast. Each week, we break down all the action in football, basketball, and the UFC. Are you a soccer fan? Maybe tennis? No, we aren't either. We stick to the good stuff. Pigskin, hoops, college and pro, and UFC action. We bring in elite guests with experience in sports gambling from all across the country. Tune in and let us help you make some greenbacks. The Games Galore Pod is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.